There is no mask even for thought, one's inmost thought, and sometimes I shudder at the realization that our fellows here can read us, as we read books illustrating character and thought and action on Earth. Here, one's thoughts return to one like boomerangs, potent and immediate in their effects. As a thought, negative or positive, comes into mind, it is crystallized into immediate action. In the human mind, a negative thought can creep in and insinuate itself between all one's good intentions, lying, apparently dormant. Then it becomes a nucleus attracting to itself thoughts of similar content until it takes on a semblance of force through emotion. Later the results, physical, material or spiritual, are manifested. But in this new life, the potency of thought is stepped up into a frequency which permits of no side stepping. The effects are immediate. Here the thought pattern is determinant of one's welfare, one's progress, one's happiness and joy. As one thinks, so one is. In environment, appearance, and in company. We have to learn to live in this new frequency, to guard the doors of one's mind, to anticipate the boomerang action of negative emotions. This is the way of life on these planes, and every soul must assimilate the way before proceeding onwards into planes of even higher frequencies. This is light and darkness as we know it, the day and night of the soul. 18th January. There is an ex-policeman here. He has been in the home for some little while, I mean before I arrived, and is soon being transferred to another station on this same plane for the reasons which I will explain. He is a simple man. He was not educated, but had a great sense of duty and always fulfilled to the best of his ability. That station in life to which it had pleased God to call him, as we used to say. He was ailing for some time, I understand, before a sudden cessation of the heart function ended his life, and he came here. He was an honest man, who had never bothered his head, his words, about religion or philosophy, and he had supposed, as many still do, that death meant the end of all knowing. It has been a great wonder and astonishment to him to find life here so normal. But he has responded well. It has taken time and much help on the part of the devoted workers here, but now that he is able to adjust to this new phase of living, he is anxious to help his family still on Earth. It appears that he had a son and a daughter, and was contented enough with his wife. The son is now in the force following in his father's footsteps. It is the girl who, he believes, needs his help. She was a pretty, wayward little thing, he told me, and at 18 had an illegitimate child. He admitted, quite without repression, that he and his wife felt great shame at the time. Nevertheless, they accepted the child and brought it up as their own. After about 2 years, the young mother deserted her family and her baby and went off to live with another man. There were rows and recriminations. But she went away and they had grown too fond of the child to send it away to a home. They saw less and less of their daughter. The baby grew into a healthy little girl, cared for tenderly by the grandparents. Later, the daughter quarreled with her protector, and went off with another man, then lived spasmodically with sailors at a southern port, and went steadily down the scale of respectability and morals, as he put it. Naturally, the grandparents and the brother were upset, and longed and worked for the girl's return to a decent life. But every time they engineered a meeting, it ended in scenes and accusations. Our policeman admitted, quite frankly, that his temper was not of the best, and that he invariably lost it during these meetings. So nothing constructive was ever managed. The grandparents were left with the child and the daughter went from bad to worse. His turn of phrase is distinct, and very reminiscent of his upbringing, and she ended by openly becoming a prostitute or, as he phrases it, being on the streets. Poor man. Poor, sad, angry father. Under the strain and worry, his health deteriorated. He had to be relieved of his duties. Worry, fear, anger and a feeling of impotence with his daughter brought on the tension which caused the heart trouble. He collapsed. He had told me of the inexplicable happenings of his dying. He was rushed to hospital, the daughter was informed and, much to his surprise, she came to see him. She was actually at his bedside, he believes, when he went out like a light, his expression. But previous to that he was, as I was able to explain to him, unconscious to the earth world, yet he could hear what went on around him. As with all dying people, he could hear, but he had no power either to think clearly or to speak. He was, however, perfectly aware of his daughter's grief. She wept bitterly and said that if only she could, she would come home again to live. He longed to say come home now, but his tongue would not obey him. His wife said Dad would want you to come home and be with us and your little one, but the girl only went on crying and saying that she was not fit to come home now. After that he recollects that he must have had it, for he remembers feeling an odd kind of rushing wind and then nothing more until he woke up here. But you can realize how his thoughts and longings go out to his daughter. He no longer feels shame or anger, only a great desire to express his love for her and to help her redeem herself from the life she is leading. He has been told of the possibility of getting into touch with those on the earth plane, and that now, is our policeman's soul, and soul, desire. He wants nothing for himself, even the prospect of progressing onwards to work at anything he wishes does not appeal to him. I must find her, he keeps repeating. If, as you say, there are ways for me to talk with her, then I must take them. I've got to say I'm sorry for my own harshness. I've got to show her that I love her, and I've got to tell her that I'm still alive. Living here, compass mentis and all, and that she will live too. But suppose she won't listen? I'll keep on and on until she does. He answered me, and there was a flash of the old stern personality. I've got to prove this to her, for my sake as well as for hers, don't you see? Because all this is still so strange. And wonderful. And because I've learned different now, he added, more quietly. So at one of our council meetings, we discussed his problem and it was decided to help our policeman on his way. There are stations on this plane where communication with the earth plane is possible. I always had an idea of this, but now I know it is a fact. In these stations there are helpers and servers who have dedicated their knowledge and service to helping those who long to send messages to loved ones still on Earth. The technique employed, I understand, is quite special and very difficult at first to follow, even by those who desire to use it. But there are stations, there are directors for this work, there are administrators and, in a sense, technicians to run them. You remember how, when I first knew you, I used to call you a celestial telephone. Well, I think of this sending out of messages from our side now as the earth telephone or the telephone of the mortals, much to Father Joseph's amusement. Privately, however, I think of it as a public telephone. At first I wanted very much to see how the work was carried on, even, perhaps, to try to send messages myself. Until it became clear to me that this would not only be a waste of effort but also a selfishness on my part, for I really have no need of this kind of help. I have been fortunate enough always to have had an inquiring mind, and with this, as you know, I delved deeply into the subjects of communication and of extrasensory perception. Telepathy, as you will confirm, we both studied and I practiced it in my small way, gaining some measure of success both with you and with others in unimportant experiences. But these methods of communication, via the astral plane, were, perhaps to my chagrin, never revealed to me. And I am convinced that there is no reason to pry now. Thus, although I may visit our man in the force in his new home and even watch him at the station and try to help him, I shall keep to the methods which seem to suit the work I am trying to do. I mean, of course, our telepathic contact, and with others, in which my mind becomes tuned to yours and can transmit and receive without need of other help. Even that of a possibly bewildering technique, for on this telepathic wave I can write with you these scraps of information on the all controversial subject of life after death, though we are merely touching the fringe of all the wonders here and hereafter. With, I trust, satisfactory results. Sufficient, anyway, to help those who may read. This is part of my task now, and you who knew me so well were aware of my characteristic, that when I got my teeth into a subject, I would never let it go until sufficient knowledge had been extracted to satisfy me. That trait serves me well here. But now I am at liberty to tell you that this is not a solo performance on my part. Not by any means. There is a band who help and guide me in the selection of incidents to be telepathed to you. In this, Father Joseph is most helpful, as he had contacted your mind previously. Your husband also helped in opening the way and was instrumental in your listening to my mind in the first instance. There are others in the band, and I understand that we are merely instruments in this work. The veil between the worlds must be rent asunder, or dissolved as you suggest. People living on Earth, the erudite, the cultured and clever minds, as well as the devotional and religious minds, and the uneducated, the illiterate and the closed minds, must all be reached. All need this knowledge to remove fear, which is one of the darkest and most powerful Earth emotions, which has to be fought and conquered before peace and progress can come to the Earth. But still my great desire and trust is that I can continue working with you all in our fellowship, and perhaps, widen the beliefs and perceptions of many souls by the work which has been planned from our side in cooperation with your endeavors on Earth. 23rd January. Your husband has been to the home often and we have had long talks together. I feel that I know and understand you much better now. His information has cleared up much that was puzzling to me in your reactions to life and to people. I now understand you in a very different way from that which I thought I understood when we worked together on Earth. He has a great respect for your gift which, he says, he never appreciated when in the body. It seems to me now that we only understand properly and without emotional prejudices when we are separated from the life on Earth. This seems such a pity, and your husband agrees. How useless is remorse here. Remorse for those things we did not do as well as for those we did, our actions mostly resulting from the fact that our minds, and therefore our reactions to circumstances, were clouded by partial judgment, and by preconceived, and often totally wrong, conclusions. We here, do regret these lacks very acutely, all the more so because scales have fallen from our eyes and we behold truth, or perhaps I would be safer in saying a wider state of truth than could penetrate and neutralize the negative emotions of the body, mind. I said that remorse here is useless. But that statement might have been too sweeping. To know all is to forgive all, so the more constructive thought one brings to bear on these regrets the better. You should know well enough that get on with the job was one of my precepts. Even with all eternity then before us, it seems oddly wasteful to me to use up energy repining forgiveness. Yes. Understanding of what was lacking and what went wrong and confession to oneself of the sins of commission and omission, together with the acceptance of shame and failure. Then a new beginning as the knowledge is turned into wisdom, an effort to right those wrongs, to help by love and concentrated direct thought to help where help is needed. Some of the souls who come to our side and who have perpetrated much evil, take a great deal of advising and helping on this point. Remorse overwhelms them and often they choose to live in the gloom of regret. This is rightly termed gloom, and I am not referring to the place of shadows, because, even here, by their sadness and remorse they are shutting themselves away from the very light which could illumine their minds, dissolve their guilts and bring a constructive ray to bear on their problems. I have visited the lower regions though, I assure you, with conductors who were able to guide and protect us. Believe me, it is a terrible region, or regions, of semi-gloom, of unwholesome sticky emotions, of utter distortion of all that is beautiful. One's feelings are wrung by the pitiful sights. Compassion flows out for those poor half, alive creatures in their self, darkness. There are wonderful helpers in these regions. These have to be advanced souls, strong in themselves and firm in the light before they can choose to do such work. Whilst I was there on a visit, I saw the face of a being of such beauty that I was arrested in my progress onwards and had to stop a while just to be in the aura of this great one. I learned afterwards that he had been almost a saint on earth. He was a great mystic, though an unlettered philosopher. Now he is the leader of a band of helpers here, and the light of his countenance, though toned down for his patience to the potency they can stand, is glorious. My conductor told me that this is his final training work and is a preparation for a high mission on which this great soul will embark. I was not sure whether this presaged a return to Earth conditions as a great teacher or seer, or whether this is a prelude to undergoing further initiation into greater mysteries. I asked as many questions on the subject as could be answered, and was informed that he was indeed a master of wisdom and a most saintly soul, devoted to the Christ and one of a great band of potential world redeemers. He has been in the spheres for more than 3 centuries, as time is reckoned on Earth, and has passed through many of the higher planes, being a member of a brotherhood of light. His selfless service here is an unspoken lesson. The sisters reverence him. Some of them have joined his band of helpers and have worked under his direction, returning to the home for rest and recuperation after the arduous duties. I know that Father Joseph often visits here and works in the band. I returned to my cottage and my golden garden with a feeling of relief, together with a great joy and appreciation of the light here. I thought a lot about those words, "they that sit in darkness and the shadow of death," and a new meaning and connotation was added to our old scriptural one. That place was shadow indeed. The shadow of death, but not so definitely the death of the body as the death of the mind, for that the mind is inert in the density caused by the wrong use of a God-given faculty, men's mind and free will. This density causes the soul to be starved to such a deficiency as to render it cut off and its light shut away. Surely that is death, or rather the shadow of death. This, to me, is far more frightening in its implications than the explanation we, on earth, accept for that phrase. Death of the body is merely a change. The shadow of death is a gruesome fact, but thank God, a fact that will never be experienced by those who try to live the good life and to open their minds to truth. And to this phrase, the good life, I do not attach any sloppy interpretation. The good life as those here see it, is not a sentimental vague dream of goodness, neither is it the ego, swelling do, gooding and praying publicly which Jesus condemned in the Pharisees. As I am learning here the following of the true inner light, the obedience to the guiding of that light and the consequent work and action prescribed by the wisdom of that light, these constitute the good life, the full life, the life more abundant of the scriptures of all religions. A soul, infused personality, remember, was a phrase I used very much on earth, and probably with a false interpretation of its true meaning. Now that I have seen this great master, soul in his humble capacity and service, the realization of what soul is has been impressed upon me, never, I trust, to be forgotten. Soul is light infused. Or infused light. The shutting away of the soul is darkness. As the sun is the carrier of light, beams to the earth, so is the sun, the second manifestation of the divine energy of creative mind, the transmitter of light beams to the soul. They that sit in darkness reject the beams from the sun and so are in death. The shadow of death. May light descend on earth. Then the terrible illusions of these shadow places will be dispelled forever. 4th February. You ask about precognition and whether it is a fact that the future is foreseeable. As far as my experience goes, and as far as this new extension of my consciousness reveals facts about Earth, lifetime, I am becoming increasingly aware of a pattern and a plan. The blueprint of one's efforts, one's successes and failures on all the planes, physical, material, emotional, mental and spiritual, does indicate that a definite line of advance is voluntarily accepted by the soul before incarnation. No doubt when I am more proficient in the study of individual lives and their results, together with the life courses of nations and their results, good or apparently not good, which have been set in motion through the law of cause and effect, I shall be no better able to appreciate how the divine pattern of individual growth and group growth is linking up from life to life and from age to age. It is only logical to assume that we take up, as it were, where we left off in a previous trial of strength and weakness. This presupposes a chain of lives, of experiences, of reincarnation in its little understood form. But I am more than convinced, as I observe stories of effort and success and failure, that the soul needs to project some part of itself back into the denser environment of Earth in repeated attempts to master the trials and stresses of those vibrations. But which part of itself, and whether it is always the same part, is still a mystery, and must remain so until we have advanced much in wisdom and insight. After talking with savants I have been privileged to meet here, there seems no reason for me to change my earthly acceptance of the fact of repeated lives, and therefore of a possibility of viewing the presentable future, even when in a material body. When a soul, or that portion of a soul which seeks enlargement of experience, reincarnates, it is at a certain stage in its divine blueprint. It will seek a trial of strength in some experiences, a leading role in human affairs in others, an emotional compensation in personal relationships and so forth. Therefore, up to a point, it fixes its own coming events because they will afford it the necessary experience it has come to gather, and these will be commensurate with the overall pattern associated with its progress. It must react, in a way, consistent with its stage of development, and thus on its path will be mapped highlights of attainment, humble or elevated in its particular sphere of influence, together with despondencies and failures which, to the inner eye, can be foreseen. As it is possible here to review the incidents in one's life on Earth with the causes which led up to these incidents, and the effects which they brought, together with the lessons they teach, so it is feasible to assume that the process can work forward as well as backward. In other words, as there is no such thing as time, the beginning, ending and the actual event are all one. Therefore, in a soul which has retained this negation of time in its consciousness on Earth, the possible future can be discerned. That there are mistakes made and unfounded sweeping assertions promulgated still does not negate the truth of this fact. The human mind can be deflected by human emotions, egotism, self-centeredness and pride, and such emotions cloud the issue of truth. But the fact remains that the possibility is there. The future springs out of the past. That certain seers have always been able to predict does not imply preordained patterns of existence in the rigid sense. It does illustrate the reality of timelessness. That each moment holds in itself all of the past and of the future. In new experiments into space exploration, the fact of weightlessness has proved itself. In the foreseeable future, so I am informed by those who know more of the pattern and the plan, souls in incarnation on Earth will be enabled to prove the fact of timelessness, and this by scientific process and experiment, possibly in that very space the scientists have set out to explore. It will be as exciting a discovery as this last advance in weightlessness and non-gravitational pull. Through the truth inherent in this new knowledge, mankind will make an immense leap forward into light. For as knowledge is increased a thousandfold, so is responsibility in following the pattern increased a millionfold. This is a great point of realization for all incarnate, as well as discarnate souls. I trust we all will learn. 7th February. Yes, I teach and I am being taught. I am able to give service to others who, through unfortunate circumstances of birth or environment, or owing to prejudice which is often a component of ignorance, have not learnt even the rudiments of living. Many who arrive here are either completely overwhelmed by the fact of a further existence, or disillusioned because in their narrow creeds, they have envisaged a heaven of utter delight which, to such crude imaginations, included the joyful inference that from henceforth no efforts would ever be needed by them. In fact, a blessed state of negativity, of passive acceptance, of paradise, a kind of super welfare state where they would dream away eternity. But this is certainly no super welfare state. It is, indeed, a state of welfare, which has a different meaning altogether, and super, yes, if by that adjective we describe an existence where beauty is manifest, where negative or unkind thoughts are prohibitive because such thoughts are visible and audible, where help and love are always at hand to help the traveler, and where every circumstance points to a greater life, a wider understanding and the glorious certainty of progress after effort and exertion. This is an existence in another dimension of thought. Disease, poverty, cruelty, suffering as it is known on Earth could not possibly exist here, because the light of the Spirit opens our vision and we seek the way to higher worlds of even more glorious beauty. Yes, I am teaching here, I am also learning compassion, for the limited consciousness which belongs to those who did not have the opportunities afforded to me of studying the mysteries of life. Our work is to be on hand when those newly arrived entities awake to awareness. Sometimes their friends and loved ones already in these realms have been alerted. Then we wait in the background until the greetings are over. In other cases, ours are the first countenances they see, ours are the words of comfort, assurance and welcome. Our patients stay with us until they have adjusted to this new life and are ready to join their dear ones or their special groups. This may be only a short passing phase or a longer period according to their state of development. According to the reactions after the first shock of individual examinations of blueprints of their earth lives, so is our method of helping them. With understanding, extreme gentleness and certainly no hint of censure, the sisters explain the rest home and its purpose. The newcomers are then introduced to the idea of an expanding progress and are encouraged to right the wrongs they have done in their earth lives by concentrated thoughts of forgiveness and compassion. I suppose you could call this a hospital, a home of rest upon the way and a kindergarten teaching center. All these terms would be correct. The weary souls, the frightened souls, the ignorant and fallen souls, together with those who have been rescued from the land of shadows, require understanding and explanation of their soul states, and there are some to whom survival has to be explained, even demonstrated. Many will not accept the fact of death, or prefer to consider that they still dream. You see how wide is our work and how, by teaching, we ourselves learn. By demonstrations of the results of other lives, I myself have learned much and I am still learning. Many of the sisters of my former community on earth have now passed on to higher spheres, but dear Mother Florence remains from choice, although she too visits other planes for refreshment and, I imagine, for reward. Other sisters from similar communities join us and work with us, and of these Sister Ursuline has become a companion to me. We have much in common and I admire her many gifts and her clear, logical mind. She will be going on to work at another receiving station, for ours, I understand, is only one of many such homes for healing, but I am also taught, not so much by lectures or books, though I still read much, as by discussion and by example. More of this later. 9 February. This is indeed a world of thought. You live, of course, also in a thought world, only with you. Thought has been crystallized very deeply into matter and much of the illusion of that existence has become solidified in the earth mind. Mind has often closed away reality from itself. Here we are what we appear. In the body one can mask one's true self, as well as one's self, and appear very different from reality. Here the persona, or mask, has been removed and our very thoughts are open to all. Think what that would mean on earth. This new interest in many of the world's scientists in extrasensory perception, especially in the fact of telepathy, will result in a wearing away of this persona mask, for through it, disloyalty, insincerity, lying, will be disclosed. In future developments in this and the next century, thoughts will indeed become things, as they are in essence and able to be read. Man will learn that truth in all things is essential. As we learn it here, anger, irritation, depression can actually be seen in the appearance and field surrounding an entity. They can actually be felt and sometimes heard as a low warning, drumming, rather like a wasp's buzzing. I have experienced this in others, and alas, other dear souls have avoided me for the same reason at times. Thoughts are truly things. That is why, when an entity comes over to this plane, he, or she, automatically graduates to the rightful plane. That is law. It also explains why some folk are so surprised and dismayed at their surroundings. For instance, one who has lived an ordinary good life, shall we say, doing the right things, attending to his outward religious observances, but all the time concealing within himself black thoughts of envy, malice, uncharitableness, will find himself in the company of such as he is, and sometimes of those worse than he is. Dismay will fill his soul until he realizes that this great law is just, and until he makes efforts to adjust his thinking to love, charity, truth, and to try to redress the wrongs he has worked on others. In these efforts there is always help at hand, always more advanced souls ready to comfort, to listen and to teach him. There are souls too, ready to guide him to higher realms and to happier company.